Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
Okay, so we have started the third major story that we're going to be covering, the story of the binding of Isaac, which is on page 100 in your Chumashim. I don't have the sheets yet. We will have them, Mirtz Hashem, soon. So we're just going to be looking at the top of the page, no cheating and looking underneath. We're just reading through the story now on page 100, chapter 22. We got about halfway through last week. We'll quickly review what we did last week and then conclude that this morning. Again, the way that we're going to be doing it, just for those who are missing it from last week, we're just going to do the verses, get the story from the text. We're going to raise lots of questions, get a real sense and feeling for this particular story, which is one of the classic stories. Although, as I mentioned last week from Rabbi Foreman, it's not your classic bedtime story that you want to tell your children of God coming out of the blue and asking Dad to kill his son. But it is certainly one of the classic stories in Jewish history and Jewish thought, and in the Torah itself. So let us get right to it. So last week, just very quickly, we're going to go through. God tests Abraham. We're going to read through. We're not going to go through all the questions, obviously, because we did that last week. You'll find it online. God appears to Avram and says to him, Avram, he replies, here I am. This is going to be significant in the beginning because we are going to get back to that today already. The beginning of this test begins with Hashem testing Avraham. The Torah explicitly says this was a test, one of a small handful of instances where the Torah explicitly states something was a test. But we have that here. He calls out to him, Avraham, and Avraham responds with the word, Hineini. Here I am. Keep that in mind because we're going to count up how many different times we find that in this story. Hashem appears to him, take your son, your only son, the one that you love, Isaac. You'll go to the land of Moriah, and you will bring him up there as an offering. And Avraham does so. He wakes up early in the morning. We saw a lot of verbs. Saddles his donkey, takes his two young men, splits the wood, stands up, and goes to the place that God had spoken to him. And it was on the third day, Avraham raises up his eyes, and he sees the place from afar. And he said to his young men, you guys stay here with the donkey. I'm going to take Isaac with me. And what are we going to do?
We're going to worship.
We're going to serve. Literally, we said last week, Hishtachaveh, we're going to prostrate ourselves. We're going to bow down. So he leaves his donkey and his two young lads that he took with him back behind. And he says to his son Isaac, we are going to serve Hashem. And then he says, and we will return to you. So Avram takes the wood for the offering and he places it on Isaac, and we pointed that out, the imagery, that it seems like, literally, I mean, the donkey had been there to schlep the wood. Now they're stopping from afar, and who's going to take over the role of schlepping the wood? It's going to be Yitzchak himself, has the wood on top of him. He takes the fire and the knife, and the two of them go together. And we pointed out last week, that verb at the end of verse 6, Pasuk Vav, Vayelchu Shnehem Yachtov, is the first plural verb that we find in the story. All of the verbs until this point have been singular. It's been Avraham's action. All of the actions which have been done, and there have been quite a few, but they are from Avraham's perspective. This point where the donkey has been left behind, and Isaac has the wood on his back, and Avraham takes the fire and the knife, and they start their journey. Now the Torah for the first time says, Vayilchu Shnehem Yachdav. They were going together, the two of them, and it's in that plural sense that they begin their journey. 7. Yitzchak speaks to Avram, his father. Vayomer Yitzchak el Avraham Aviv. Yitzchak says to his father, and he says, Vayomer Avi, and he says, Avi. What are the words that Yitzchak says to his father? Simply the name. He says, Father. Vayomer, and how does Avram respond?
Hineini.
How many times is that so far?
Two.
Two. That's been easy so far, right? So he responds, Hineini, to God when Hashem comes to him and says, in what will be a test, take it, but Avram doesn't know what he's going to say to him yet. Hashem just calls out from the blue. He says, Avram, and Avram responds, Hineini. They're now on the way. It's just Avraham and Yitzchak walking together. Yitzchak calls out and says, Father, and Avram responds, Hineini, I'm here. And he says, Hineni bini, I am here, my son, which we pointed out as well. Avram's task that he's now embarking on is to slaughter his son as a sacrifice, and yet he still calls him my son, whereas psychologically we would have expected him to be distancing himself and separating himself more and more as the closer they get, and he responds with the words of Hineni Bini, here I am, my son. Vayomer, now Yitzchok says, Hinei Hoesh Vehoetzim, Ve'ayei Asel Yolo, I see the fire, I see the knife, I see the wood, where's the lamb? And Avram responds, Elokim Yirelo Hasel Yolo Bini, God himself will seek for himself the lamb for the offering, my son. And with that response, that God will seek for himself the offering, then the Torah again repeats, Vayelchu Shnehem Yachtov. Same phrase that we had when they began the journey, just the two of them after leaving the donkey, that the two of them journeyed together. So if you have the same phrase twice, it would seem to connect. They were journeying together before the conversation, and then we have the same Vayelchu Shnehem Yachtov, they were journeying together after the conversation. So what would you say is the significance of that?
Yitzhak didn't break and run away.
Simply said, it sounds like nothing has changed. Mm-hmm. Even though there was a very significant, monumental conversation has taken place in between these two phrases. Yitzhak calls out and says, Father, and he says, yes, and he says, where is the lamb? And he says, God will show himself the lamb. Yet the bookends of that conversation, they still walked together, are there implying that nothing has really changed in their relationship, even though we have this monumental conversation in between. This is where we're up to. Okay. So, Vayelchu Shnehem Yachtav. Let us begin now. Let's pick up from here. That was your 6-minute version of all that we accomplished last week. It was fast. If you didn't pick up on all of it, I hope not, because otherwise, why did we spend an hour on it last week? But check it out online. You can go over all the details. We had a much slower pace. Okay, that's where we're up to. Let's pick up. Verse 9. And they arrived the place which God had spoken to him. I'm going to read the verse and we'll go through all of our comments and questions. And Avraham there builds the altar. And he arranges the wood. And he bound up Isaac, his son. And he placed him on the altar atop the wood. Questions and comments? Yeah. No, is it okay, this verse?
Isaac didn't say anything.
Okay, excellent. So what we notice here is Isaac is a non-player. Isaac, who clearly has his tongue, he asks the question just the verse before, like, where is the lamb? Avraham responds, God will find for himself the lamb. They get to the place, and we do not hear from Yitzchak. Not only do we not hear from Yitzchak here, we are not going to hear from him for the rest of the story.
Was his mouth bound in any way?
Okay, so at this point we're frozing out questions and comments, so either his mouth was bound, or he just doesn't say anything. But it's a good point. In this critical junction, we don't hear from him. Excellent. What else do we see in this verse? I mean, we could sort of follow up on that comment. Who's doing all the action verbs in this verse?
Avram.
Right? Sort of follow up on that comment. It's all Avram. The verse begins with them, plural, arriving in the place.
Yeah.
And then once they both arrive, the story then again reverts the narration strictly to the perspective of Avraham. He is the one who builds the altar. He's the one who arranges the wood. He's the one who binds up his son Isaac. He's the one who places him on top of the wood. It's all Avraham, good.
Doesn't seem to be any resistance from.
That seems to be no resistance. How would you arrange the three verbs of arranging the wood, binding Isaac, and placing him on top of the wood? How would you have arranged? Like, how would you have done that?
First he bound him.
Right. What would you think he should have done? That's what he does.
No, he builds the altar first.
Right, and then he
binds the wood, and then he binds.
And then he does what?
He binds Isaac.
And then what does he do?
Places him on the altar.
So I would have thought I would have placed him down first and then bound him down to it.
Hmm.
You would not have done that.
I think at this point Isaac really doesn't know what's coming after building the altar.
So in other words, if we read it that way, that means he was bound against his will, and then once he couldn't move, Avraham puts him on top there against his will.
How old is
he? Was an old man.
Isaac is 37 years old at this point.
So he just 37? Lifted him up and put him.
Right, Avraham is 136, 137.
It doesn't seem that
last
he could do that.
Last week when we were talking about this and you stopped, and I wanted to say, the reason they were continuing together is because, in my mind, Isaac realized what was happening. And that's why there wasn't a fight.
Excellent. Rashi is going to comment that the sages also see it the way that you do, in the sense that repetitive phrase, they walked together, same phrases before he knew as after he had an inkling, and yet he still went along. But let's just put it as a comment so we find that he gets bound up. Sounds like he's bound up while he's like standing. Because the next verb is, and he was placed upon the altar. It is interesting that it sounds like Yitzchak is just watching him build the altar. In other words, what's Yitzchak doing when Avram is building the altar? Maybe, but it doesn't say that. It doesn't say they arrived, they built the altar, and then Avraham bound him up and put him on top of it. It says an Avraham, specifically, in other words, after already using the plural verb, they arrived, then the Torah goes out of its way to say, and Avraham built the altar, implying that Isaac was not involved in that. Yeah.
Because the direction was to Abraham to do all these things.
Good. That's an excellent approach. In other words, at the end of the day, whose commandment is this? It's Avraham's commandment, and we see that he is the one who becomes the central figure in the narration. He's the one who's doing all of these actions. Excellent. Let's go further. 10. Pasuk Yud. Vayishlach Avraham es yado. And Avraham stretched out his hand. Vayikach es hama'achalas. And he grabbed hold of the knife, l'shchot es beno, to slaughter his son. Certainly you have the dramatic moment where the Torah actually is like taking it, like line by line, like he stretched out his hand to take the knife, seemingly totally extraneous. But we have this vayishlach es yado. Now, it's been a while since we've seen the previous story that we read. But this verb of vayishlach appeared there also twice. If you'll very quickly flip back just a few pages to chapter 21, in verse 14, page 96. Page 96, so this is a story in which Avram expels Hagar, his wife, and his son Ishmael. In verse 14, Abraham awoke early in the morning, which we also commented in verse 14. Where do we see that phrase? And that's in our story. Avraham wakes up early in the morning for the binding of Isaac as well. He took bread and a skin of water and gave them to Hagar. He placed them on her shoulder along with the boy and sent her off. Ayishlacheha. She then goes and wanders in the desert. Verse 15, when the water runs out, Vatashleches hayeled, etachas achad hasichim. She casts off the boy. So that verb appeared as well in that story twice. Avraham sending off Hagar, and then she sends off her son with that same verb. And now we have that verb appearing again. In this instance, it's appearing in which Isaac is not being sent off because he's actually bound in front of him, but he's sending forth his hand to grab hold of the knife that he will use. We'll get back to all this. Okay, but the same verb is appearing within the story. We're just going to find the links in the stories in which there are certain commonalities in the story. What did I just read? 10, right? So, Vayishlach Avraham es yadosi, he sends forth his hand, Vayikach es hamachalos, and he takes the knife, L'shchot es beno. 11, Vayikroi lov malach Hashem min hashamayim, and an angel of Hashem calls out to him from the heavens, Vayomer, Avraham, Avraham, calls out to him, Abraham, Abraham, Vayomer, Hineini. Okay, comments. What do we see in this verse?
I'm doing it.
Okay, well, not quite. I have the first phrase. Where have we seen this phrase before? Vayikroi lov malach Hashem in Hashemayim.
An angel spoke to Hagar.
Hagar, if you flip back to page 96 again, we have that exact same phrase in verse 17. No, excuse me, 16.
No, 17.
God hears the voice of the lad in verse 17 on page 96. Vayikro malach Elokim el Hagar min Hashemayim. And an angel of God calls out to Hagar from the heavens. See that?
Mm-hmm.
Now there's a significant difference if you look at these two phrases. I wonder if, is it there in the English? Yeah, you could see it in the English also.
Oh, with Hagar it says an angel of God.
Excellent.
I'm guessing is Elohim.
Elohim. In the Hagar story on page 96, let me just take a step back and make sure everybody's with me. We have here two episodes we've been trying to compare: Abraham sending out his son Ishmael and Abraham sending out his son Isaac. And we're going to just compare these two stories as we've been studying them. When it came to sending out his son Ishmael, so Ishmael's mother Hagar and Abraham and Ishmael are wandering around the desert. He's about to die, just like Isaac is about to die. And when right before Ishmael dies of thirst, an angel of God calls out to Hagar. Except there, how do we describe the angel? As an angel of Elohim, an angel of God, connoting God's aspect of judgments, calls out to Hagar from the heavens. In ours, we're going to do a lot more comparisons when we finish our whole story, which I really should be focused on our story. This is confusing. I'm sorry about that. But in our story, also Isaac is about to die here, not by thirst, but at the hands of his father, who was commanded to bring his son as a sacrifice. He sent his hand to the knife, just like Hagar sent her son away from her. He's now taken the knife, and an angel of, not Elohim, but an angel of Hashem, using the name, the Yud and the Hey and the Vav, and an angel of mercy, calls out to Abraham. And also, what does he call out? He says, Abraham, Abraham. Now, by Hagar, the angel didn't say anything to her. He didn't say Hagar. He just said, Malach Hagar. What's up? What's going on? Why are you worried?
But he did call Hagar's name.
Yeah, he said, Malach Hagar. He didn't do it in the way of Hagar. He said, what's wrong, Hagar?
Right.
Here is Abraham, and he does it twice. Abraham, Abraham. How many times did God call out to Abraham in the beginning of our test?
Twice.
No, in the beginning of verse 20, chapter 22, verse 1.
Yes. Abraham, Abraham.
No.
No, it's just one.
Page 100. Flip back just one page.
Just one.
And it happened after these things that God attested Abraham and said to him, Abraham. And he replied, Hineini, here I am. So in the original test, Hashem calls out to Abraham just once. He says, Abraham. And Abraham responds with, Hineini. He goes through the whole story. He gets his message. He does it. He goes out there. He leaves a donkey. He takes Isaac. He binds him up. He puts him down. He stretches forth his arm. He raises a knife. And now an angel of Hashem calls out and says to him twice, Abraham, Abraham. And he responds, Hineini, which is now our third time. What are our three Hineinis now?
The first is
when God calls out and says, Avraham, and he responds, I'm here. The second was
Yitzchak
calls out to him and says, Father, what's the deal here? And Avraham responds, Hineini. And now a third time, as he's about to do it, an angel calls out to him, and here the angel calls out to him twice, Avraham, Avraham, and again he responds, Hineini. So far, so good?
What's the big significance between calling it out once?
Excellent. That's a good question, and we're at the question stage, so I will accept your question and I will not answer it.
And you will not answer it, okay?
Right? We're just developing the story. Like, what are the points?
So
in other words,
call somewhere to get an answer.
No, you just have to come back next week. If If I give the answer no, you're not going to come back.
We tried. Whether you give us the answer or not.
So what we're doing right now is pointing out that this story, which I would say everybody is on some level familiar with. Yeah, of course, you know the binding of Isaac. But when you actually read the story, there are a lot of points here that the Torah is trying to convey to us, that you really need to read it word by word and notice all these differences. That's a question which you probably have never asked, because who notices that unless you stop and think and read it line by line? What is the difference between when God tests Avraham and he only calls out to him once, and the angel calling out at the end of the story who calls out twice, and Hagar who doesn't get anything? Hagar just gets the actual message. What's wrong, Hagar? Why are you afraid? Why doesn't the angel call out to her and say, Hagar, Hagar, what? He doesn't do that. He goes straight into his question. Why do we find all of that? Yeah.
Well, I would think that there's a lot of emotion involved here with Abraham, because you know he's probably in a different mindset here, and he's about to slay his son.
Mm-hmm.
So the angel has to really get his attention to pull him back from what he's about to do.
Okay, that's a fine answer, but we're dealing with questions,
like
so I don't know, we'll leave that on the table. Right now we're noting the difference. I do agree with you that the Torah is trying to convey to us an emotionally significant story. And you find it with the Bani, with my son, it's there. We have that. Okay, let's move forward. So we have this dramatic moment of Avraham with the knife outstretched and the angel calling out to him, Avraham, Avraham. And he responds, Hineni. Now, what? He doesn't respond that way. He responds, Hineni. I am here. Vayomer. Now, I remind you, well, let's read this verse first. Vayomer. And the angel says, Al tishlach yadcho el hana'ar. Do not stretch out your hand to the lad. V'al tas lo me'uma, nor do anything to him. Ki atoya dati, for now I know, ki yarei Elokim ata, that you are a one who fears God, v'loi chosachto es bincho es yechidcho mimeni, since you have not withheld your son, your only one, from me. Here is the message from the angel Avram with his hand outstretched, and the angel calls out and gives him this message, a very wordy message. Let's break it down. Do not stretch out your hand against the lad, nor do anything to him. For now I know that you are a God-fearing man, since you have not withheld your son, your only one, from me. Okay, let's bring a lot of things here. What are some of the points we need to figure out here?
He didn't know it before that he was a God-fearing man.
Okay, excellent. So it sounds like, one point at a time, sounds like literally, not just it sounds like, the Torah is stating, now God knows that Avraham is a God-fearing man, because that's what he says, Ki ato yodati, for now I know that you are a God-fearing man. Now we can go back over. We're in chapter 21. We've been introduced to Abraham back in chapter 15. We've had a lot of stories with him. Chapter 12 we're introduced to Abraham. We've had a lot to do with him. A lot of miraculous events, a lot of wars, a lot of sacrifice, years of childlessness. Now he's known as a God-fearing man. So that's certainly like what happened here. A follow-up question: if we had to choose this whole episode, does this display Abraham's fear of God or love of God? If you went back to verse 1, in verse 1, when God calls out to Abraham and says, Abraham, and Abraham responds, Hineni, and God says, take your son, your only one, the son you love, and offer him as a sacrifice to me. Push pause. And we don't read verse 3 yet, where Abraham does it, or starts the process. And we push pause, and we say, well, we know this is a test, and we know that now what the test is that a test of love, or is it a test of fear, or would you say it's a test of something else? I asked that question, if you remember, when we started. God says it's a test. What is it a test of? Would we have looked at that first verse, verse 2, and said, it's a test of do you fear me? Would you have said that? Or would you have said love? Would you have said something else?
Fear.
You would have gone with fear?
No, I would have.
You would not have said fear.
It's a little bit of both. Oh, it's his connection to Hashem. Mm-hmm. Avram knew that this was a test.
We know more than him, because we're reading the book. So all we know is God tells us, the reader, when he appears to Avram that he tested Avram. But all that Avram hears is, Avram! And he responds with, Hineni, he's not told, like we're not told in life. Imagine about it. It would be a very different experience if we were to live life, and right before something would happen, right before the phone would ring, and we get a piece of news, we get a little email from God that says, by the way, what you're about to experience is a test. Good luck. And then the phone would ring, and you'd hear whatever piece of information you'd hear. That would be a very different experience in life. And I think we would handle it very differently if we got that little email right before we picked up the phone that said, by the way, this is a test. But by the way, it is. And I'm telling you now, and you're not going to remember it, but everything that... But anyway, Avram doesn't know that. He's not told that this is a test. So in any case, I'll leave it on the table for now, because we're going to move forward. Hold on one second. Okay. That God, the angel says to Avram, what I see from the fact that you've gotten to the place that you are, is that you fear God. Not that you love Him, not that anything else, that you fear Him, which we'll leave on the table. Certainly an interesting thing. Yeah, well, she was first.
Well, no, I was going to say something that this comes, it appears in the story to come right after the expulsion of Ishmael.
That's correct, it does.
So there has to be something going on, I would think, and maybe Abraham's relationship with Isaac that has been impacted in some way by the expulsion of Ishmael.
Possible.
That brings about this test.
Possible. That's fine. In other words, that goes back to the very first phrase of it happened after these things that God tested Isaac. The Torah itself is linking this story to the previous story. So there is no question that that's correct. And the sages will pick up on that and will try to uncover what that connection is. Something about the test of Abraham kicking out his son Ishmael leads to this test of offering his son. Yeah.
I'm not quite sure if I should venture a consideration or not.
Right, more questions. Right now, I really want more questions.
Okay. The question then would be, does the statement, here I am,
mm-hmm.
have a possible flip side to it?
Meaning?
God knows he's there.
Yeah.
He doesn't have to say to God.
Right. So what does it mean when he says, here I am?
I'm ready.
Right. Yeah, that's not a flip side. I think that's a simple meaning.
That I recognize you. I'm here with you.
Yeah, no, that's correct. No, you are 100% correct, and we're going to get back to this when we put this all together. Three times Abraham says in this story, I am here. I am ready. I am at your beck and call. He says it to God. He says it to his son. He says it to the angel at different points in the story. And that will be a major central theme of understanding what this test is. But we got to move. So let's go back to this verse. This is a very important verse. First of all, what does the angel tell Abram not to do?
Stretch out his arm against the
land. Not stretch out, yeah.
And? Okay, we have a double language here. Do not stretch out your hand against the lad, nor do anything to him. We'll have to see why is that necessary to say that second phrase of nor do anything to him. How do we refer to the child at this point?
The lad.
Right, we've pointed out as we go through the story how many different ways we refer to the relationship between Avram and his children, whether or not we refer to him as Bini, my son, his son, the lad. And here the angel refers to him specifically as the lad. And what about the back half of this phrase? Since you have not withheld your son, your only one, from me, what does that refer us back to?
When you love
the mother. That's also double language. You have not withheld your son, your only one.
Went from way back to son.
Okay, good, excellent. We go back to son, and what else? How was the command given to Abram in verse 2?
I think it's your son, your only one.
Excellent, right? We had three phrases there. Take your son, your only one, whom you love, Isaac.
Mentions his name.
Right? Three phrases and then a name. Take your son, your only one, whom you love, Isaac. Here, when the angel tells him not to do it, we have certainly a reference back to that because the angel says you have not withheld your son, your only son. That double language certainly refers us back, although he doesn't go the whole 9 yards of and the one you loved. but I do see that you are fearful of God. And what is it that Avram did? He did not withhold his son. That's how the angel phrases it. How do I know that you're a God-fearing man? Because you didn't withhold your son from me. Now, an interesting point to contemplate, who gave Avraham the original command to sacrifice his son?
God.
Who gives Avraham the command not to sacrifice his son? Very interesting. If I got a command from God to do something, I would have expected a command from God if he wants me not to do it. Or if anything, I would have gone the other way, you know, maybe have the angel say to do it, then God himself overriding it, telling me not to do it. It's certainly of note that if God himself appears to Avraham to tell him to do it, that an angel is sent to tell him not to do it, and Avraham knows to listen to the angel and doesn't say, wait a minute, you don't have the authority to go against a command. I got a command directly from the boss. I got a command from God himself, and now I have this angel of God telling me not to do it.
That's during the daytime.
Okay.
What do you mean during the daytime?
All right, Dean is pointing out that God appears, except to Moshe, always in the form of a dream in a trance-like stage. So it could be as simple as the original command was given at night while he was sleeping because he wakes up early the next morning. So God can appear to him in a dream during a trance-like state. But now that we don't have time for that because we're in the middle of the action, so it's an angel that calls out and responds to him. Very interesting thought.
But there's no resistance by Yitzchak.
Right, he's completely a non-player. As we pointed out from his last conversation of Yehu Shnehem Yachlev, and they continued to walk together, even after Avram said to him, God will find for himself the sacrifice that he desires, we don't see him again. That is correct.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Why at the end of 12 does he say, from me?
Right, so it's clearly that the angel is representing God in that, and it's not God himself speaking, but the angel himself speaking. Now I'll just point out one other interesting thing and then we'll go forward. If you look at the names of God that we refer to in verse 11, it's an angel of, which name of Hashem do we use in verse 11? Right, the name of the Yud in the Hay and the Vav in the Hay. An angel of the merciful God calls out to Abraham. And then in verse 12, when the angel speaks, what is Abraham fearful of? Which name of God do we use to describe that Abraham has a fear of God?
Elohim.
We go back to the name Elohim, which is the same name, right, that was the angel that was used for Hagar's story, but this is the angel not of mercy, but the angel of judgment, that you are a fearful person of God, using that other name of God. Okay, so far so good?
Mm-hmm.
So now we're at the point of the story, so Avram puts down the knife, he's gotten a call from the angel not to do anything, not to harm the child, not to do anything to him. For now it is known that you are a God-fearing man, that you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me. Vayisa Avraham es einav, and Avraham raises his eyes and sees, vihine ayol achar ne'echaz basvach v'karnav. Behold a ram afterwards, caught in the thicket by its horns. Vayelech Avraham goes, vayikachas ha'ayol, and he takes the ram, vayaaleo li'olo, and he brings it as an offering, tachas bino, underneath or instead of his son. Okay, what do we find in this verse that's of note?
Why should he make an offering at this site?
Okay, excellent. Why does he have to do anything?
That's right.
In other words, he was told by God, bring your son as an offering. God has now rescinded the commandment through the angel and told him, don't bring your son as an offering, go home! And we see it does not play itself out that way. It plays itself out that he feels he wants to offer something. And how does the story actually present itself? Avram raises up his eyes and he sees it. Was he told to bring the ram?
No.
So let's just, we'll add that to your question.
Right.
So when he raises up his eyes and he sees the ram, why did he feel it? Just because he said, well, I spent all this time building this altar, and I got all this wood, might as well. Right? And so that's a possibility, but probably it's more than that. But that's a great point to bring up. In other words, the command was bring up your son, And now that that's not going to be fulfilled, why do I have to do anything? But Avram does bring a ram, tachas bino, in the place of his son. What else do we see in this that brings us back to the story of Hagar?
Well, before that, although related, there's the Avram raised his eyes.
Right. Yeah.
But I see that also in verse 4, where he raised
Excellent.
His eyes and saw the place.
Good. So we're going to, that's a beautiful point. We have
a special phrase that has special meaning.
Okay, we have the phrase in verse 4, as they were walking, that Avram raises up his eyes and he sees the place off from a distance where he's going. And the same phrase here, he raises his eyes and he sees the ram. So what we're going to do is we're going to see a structure, I forget what it's called, in which we're going to go towards the center, in which there everything is, what's it called, a chiasm? There's a word for that type of structure in which a story goes A, B, C, D, C, B, A, in the way that the story is told, so that there's a clear set, chiatic? There's a word for that. There's where there's a center of the story, and the way that you know what the center is, because if you focus, if you follow the story builds up, and then it goes back, but through the same order. So you the story A, and then B, and then C, and then D, and then you go back to the C appears again, and then the B variable appears again, and then A. So you say, oh, when you look at it, you scale back, you say, oh, there's a clear structure here. So we have three Hinanis. And we're going to have these two, Vayisos Einav, he raises up his eyes. So we're going to see this structure is going to play itself out. But where else do we see the raising of his eyes? Somebody mentioned also by Hagar. Mm-hmm. Where Hagar also, her son Yishmael, who had been kicked out of the house, was also about to die. An angel of God calls out to her, says, don't worry, he will live, he'll be a great nation. And there the phrase was, and her eyes were opened, and she saw the well. Here we have that similar structure of the child who the test is about, Yitzchak is about to be killed. The angel of God calls out and stops it. And here Abraham raises up his eyes, not that they're open, but he raises up his eyes and he sees the ram and he offers up the ram instead. Now, what are there some other interesting phrases in this verse? What else do we have here?
The word afterwards.
Afterwards. Right?
Sure
very,
what
afterwards. To do with that, right? Your English teacher would never have allowed this. Never, 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 never. And Abraham raised his eyes and saw, behold, the ram afterwards caught in that. What is that word doing there? What does it mean? Afterwards of what?
Yeah. After he saw that he wasn't going to kill Isaac?
I mean, we have to find something. And the word is clearly there for a reason, and it clearly is misplaced as far as if you were just writing a story. That doesn't fit. Afterwards, after of what is it? So we have this image of this ram being caught. Why is it significant, by the way, that it was caught by its horns in the thicket? There's a technical point. In order to bring a sacrifice, it has to be whole and unblemished. So where's Abram going to get a ram that he's just going to like walk over and take it? It's going to run away from him. And if it's maimed, if it's hurt, then he can't offer it. So the significance here is a technical point, that it was caught in the thicket by its horns, so that the ram is stuck, yet unblemished, and is able to... Now, I will go back to what happened with Hagar, in which the language the Torah uses is that her eyes were opened and there was a well there, implying that the well had always been there, just that she couldn't see it. Because the language was not God created a well, but that her eyes were opened and she saw a well. Now, if you were Abraham and you go up to this place and you have this man and there was a ram caught there by its horns, and it's possible you wouldn't notice it because you are focused, you have a task at hand, but it's interesting that it's as if he didn't see it there. He's going up there.
He had other things on his mind.
Right, yeah, I'm saying just the imagery of it sounds like it, you know, afterwards, unless the afterwards was it like suddenly. After this event takes place, it got caught right then and there. Or it was always there and he didn't notice it. We're going to have to deal with that word afterwards. And then we have this fact that this ram, of course, is quoted here. And this, is the imagery of the shofar. This is why the shofar is also connected to Rosh Hashanah. We have the concept of the ram's horn, which was this sacrifice, which is going to be in place of Isaac. And we're going to have to answer your question of why did he have to bring anything anyway? But meanwhile, he does. He takes the rib and he offers it as an offering instead of his son. And that will also be added to your question. The Torah doesn't just say, well, while I'm here, let me bring something. But that the offering of the ram was done with the intention that it should be tachas bino. It should be instead, it should be in the place of his son. So that it wasn't just, I'm here, there's a ram, let me offer a sacrifice. But that the intention was that this will be in place of my son Isaac, and that had the story ended, and this would be the question, you know, like you could always ask these nice questions, and what would be different had there never been a ram? In other words, let's take this whole story. God comes to Abraham and gives him a test. Abraham wakes up in the morning, goes through the whole process, they walk, he leaves the donkey behind and takes his son Isaac. Isaac asks his father, what's the deal? God will show them. And then he gets up there and the angel stops him and they go home together.
You just hit on it. Because he told his son, Abraham told Isaac, there will be a ram. God will provide the ram. So there had to be a ram.
So good. So let's say he would have just said, I don't know, Isaac, good question. we asked the question, like, what was the actual test? And whatever that test will be, like, what did God want from Abraham? And it seems clear that had the story ended without the ram, it would be incomplete. Something would be missing. That this is an integral part of the story, that there be a sacrifice offered, and that it should be in place of his son Isaac, and as we see, it is this ram. Yeah.
You would expect then that there would be some more dialogue from Isaac.
Okay, and again, and we just, in other words, was Isaac thinking? Here he was, right? He goes with his dad, he says, Dad, yeah, where's the ram? We'll find it. They walk together. He gets bound up, he gets placed on it. His father Abram takes out the knife.
Oh, God.
Now, what do you think? Can Isaac hear the angel calling out to Abram or no? No?
Probably not.
So if he doesn't...
I don't know.
And I don't know either. If he doesn't, picture what he's experiencing. He's sitting there, bound up as a sacrifice. His father takes out the knife, has it raised above his throat, suddenly stops, puts down the knife, grabs the ram, and offers the ram instead of him. Talk about an emotional roller coaster. Mm-hmm. And we don't see a word spoken between Avram and Yitzchak this entire time. I don't know. Maybe Isaac does hear the voice of the angel. I don't know. The Torah clearly doesn't tell us. The Torah tells us the angel calls out to Avraham and says, Avraham, Avraham. And he says, Hineni.
Well, if you assume that there was no ram when they went up,
mm-hmm.
Isaac must have been the offering.
Correct.
So, all of a sudden, there is a ram, hooray! I can offer it.
And he would see that as the sign from God, that that's really what God...
Right.
But how does Yitzchak respond to his father when he's like, you know, Dad...
And he was screaming.
Right? So we'll have to see in terms of Yitzchak's experience here and Abram's experience here, yeah.
Wasn't it a lamb at first, not a ram?
The verse
Isaac
was, yeah, well,
Abraham
the discussion was that they would bring a lamb, and what they found caught was actually a ram. That's correct. Okay, no, let's raise an interesting point. In other words, Yitzchak's question was, where is the seh? Because he assumed it would be a lamb. God, Abram responds to him, God will choose for himself the lamb. And then what's found caught in the thicket was actually an ayal, not a seh, was a ram, and that's what he actually brings. Interesting why that should be that way. Okay, we got to move forward. 15, Vayikro Maloch Hashem el Avraham Sheinis min Hashamayim, the angel of Hashem called to Avram a second time from heaven. Right, we had a number of instances with Hagar where she had a series of conversations with the angels. Here we don't have the angel, just an angel. The angel calls out to Hashem to Avram a second time from heaven. Vayomer binishpati nu'um Hashem, and he said, by myself I shall swear the word of Hashem that because you have done this thing and have not withheld your son, your only one, Let's read the whole thought. 17. Kivarech avarechecha, I will surely bless you. Veharvo arbe zarecha, and I will greatly increase your offspring. Kikoichvei ha-shamayim, like the stars of the heavens. Vechachoyel asher al tzvas hayom, and the sand on the seashore. Vayirosh zarecha eis sha'ar oivav, and your offspring shall inherit the gate of its enemy. Okay, so two verses together, really three, 15, 16, and 17. Comments, questions?
Well, I think part of the fear, the reason God fearing was because the promise had been made that Isaac would be the one that would carry on.
Excellent. So that's the point we're going to certainly get back to, that part of this test was that Isaac had already been the one who was pointed out to, who had been determined to be the one who was going to be the fulfillment of this blessing, which had already been said once, that your children will be as numerous as the stars in the heaven, the dust, and the sand of the earth. Mm-hmm. So this blessing was given, and it was going to be through Isaac that it would happen, and that's certainly part of the test of, now take that child, which I've promised all of these things for you, and offer him as a sacrifice. Well, that's impossible. That will certainly be part of it. Now, yeah?
I was going to say, another thing that by myself I swear. It's not often that we hear God
right?
swear.
God usually doesn't eat, right? We need to swear. Why do we human beings need to swear? Because we're liars. And since we're liars, so we swear to say that what I'm saying here is the truth. Right? In a court of law, not just in a secular court, even in a Beis Din, there are places where a person has to swear, and we attribute much greater significance to your words, even though any word that a person says should be completely honest, and we assume that. But in a court of law, there's a higher level when you swear to it, which is why God generally does not need to swear, because there's no, like, we don't have that aspect of, oh, you're really serious now, you really, like, God says something, it's reality. So it is of note that the angel here representing God has that language of binishpati, I will swear that this will in fact come true, that because you have done this thing, you will be blessed in the way that I've already promised you. Like, what's with that aspect of the Shua accent? Yeah.
Because at first he said your son will be part of this blessing, and then he took it back and said Abraham was led to believe that he wasn't, and now he has to reiterate it again because he has to say, yes, indeed, I will fulfill
okay.
that blessing.
Okay, you're giving an answer.
Is that a possibility?
It's a possibility.
Possibility.
It's a possibility. We find here also that the angel repeats the phrase that you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me. He says that twice. Mm-hmm. He says that when he first calls out, he says, do not do anything to the lad. Now I see you are a God-fearing man because you did not withhold your son, your only son, from me. And now when he calls out the second time, he repeats that phrase in his oath that the blessings will be fulfilled of the stars of the heaven and the sand of the earth because you have not withheld your son from me, your only son, by doing so. And both times he drops the phrase that God originally uses, the one you love. God used three phrases, your son, your only son, the one you love. The angel will use this twice, because you have done this thing and not withheld him, but he only refers to him with two of those phrases, your son, your only son. Now again, Avram has another son, he has Yishmael, who he kicked out in the previous story that we learned, but here he's referred to as twice as your son, your only son, and he does not refer to him as the son you love. Now there's a third aspect of the blessing that's added here, which we're going to have to discuss why here, because the blessings of the sun, the numerousness of the stars and the sand, as we've heard before, why is that repeated, and why do we add here the last phrase of
inherit the gate of
you will inherit the gates of your enemies, right? Why here at this moment, they're standing on the place that the Beis HaMikdash will eventually be built, standing at the place where the altar is, and now Avram has just nearly sacrificed his son and instead brought a ram. So when the blessing of the numerousness of the stars and the sand, all right, that makes sense. I mean, we almost killed your only son. So it makes sense that I would reiterate, even adding a vow, an oath, that he will become as numerous as the stars and the sand. But why here do we add, and he will inherit the gate of its enemies? Like, why is that appropriate to add specifically here?
I
Yeah?
If I could, if you go back to chapter 15, when Abraham has the dream and God speaks to him in the dream and mm-hmm. tells him that all these things are going to happen.
Yeah?
Yeah, that his offspring will be aliens and they will be in bondage for 400 years. So maybe here is a reminder that...
But eventually he'll go back and conquer them. Okay, could be.
Maybe.
Good thought. Good thought. 18. V'hisbaruchu v'zarecho kol goyei ha'aretz, and the nations of the earth shall bless themselves by your offspring. Again, the phrase that we find several times in the Chumash. They will bless themselves by saying they should be like you and your children. That'll be the catchphrase when the nations of the world want to say something nice to their children. They'll say you should be like Abraham and his children. Ekev asher shomata v'koli, because you have listened to my voice. And again, this was a test. And Avram has passed it by listening to the voice of God. So when we look for clues as to what did God want from Avraham, we see the phrases, you have not withheld your son, you were God-fearing, and you listened to my voice. Those are just the phrases that we'll try to put together as we try to come up with what the story is about. Those are the phrases that we've seen. You've listened to my voice, you have not withheld your son, we saw that phrase twice, and that you are a God fear. Now I know that you fear God as all of the components that will make up what this test is. 19. Vayoshav Avraham el Ne'arav, and Avraham returned to his young men. Vayakumu, and they stood up. Vayelchu Yachdov, and they went together to Beersheva. Vayeshav Avraham beBeersheva, and Avraham dwelled in Beersheva. Comments?
Well, it only says Avraham returned.
Excellent. Big problem. Yeah. For two reasons.
He doesn't return to Sarah.
Okay, there are a couple problems here. Good. Number one, how many people should return?
Two.
Two, because first of all, Avraham said that earlier. Right?
Will return.
Well, that's not a reason why they should, but he said earlier to his two lads and to his donkey, we will return. And here, even though there's no reason why Yitzchak shouldn't come back, the Torah is very clear that we revert back to the singular language, that it's only Avraham who's returning to them. Where is Yitzchak? Obvious question. Avraham does not return to his wife Sarah. He goes back to Beersheva. Why is that? Now there's an extraneous verb here that seems to make no sense.
They stood up.
Vayakumu. Where else did we find this extraneous verb that made no sense to us?
After Abraham chopped the wood.
Excellent. Back in verse 3, or was it 4? No, 3. All the verbs that Avraham was doing to get ready. If you flip back to page 101, Abraham woke up early in the morning. I'm reading verse 3. He saddled his donkey. He took his two young men. He split the wood and stood up and went to the place of which God had spoken to him. Said, what do you mean he stood up? He's been running around, chopping wood, saddling his donkey. That's the fifth verb in the story already. What did it mean he stood up? And we find that again. Remember A, B, C, D, C, B, D, A? We have this extraneous vayakumu at the very beginning of the story, and we have it at the very end of the story, and we don't know what it means in either place. Why? What is this verb, and he got up? What was he getting up from? What was he doing? Yeah.
Could it be not a literal verb, but rather a sign of recognition of God?
I mean, it could be anything, but there's no reason why I would assume that. Vayakumu means he stood up.
Just because it doesn't fit in.
All right, but if it's because it doesn't fit in, doesn't mean you can say it means whatever you want it to mean.
Okay.
Vayakumu means he stood up. He got up. Right, so you're right that we don't know what it means, but that doesn't mean that we could say that it means
that
he recognized God, because then we would have used a different word. But so we find both in the beginning of the story and the end of the story this verb of vayakumu, and he stood up, and it really doesn't seem... At the end of the story, it makes a little bit of sense. Like, I mean, I guess the lads were just standing around waiting, but like, why do we need to know that? Like, what does it add to the story that we're told that he returned to his young men, and they stood up, and they went together? Now, that phrase, vayelchu yachdav, they went together, is also interesting. Because where else did we have that phrase, vayelchu yachdav? We had that phrase twice, that Avraham and Isaac and Yitzchak went together after they left the lads and the donkey the first time. When they started their journey, it says, vayelchu shnehem yachdav. They went together. And then Isaac asks his question, and he says, Father? He says, yeah. He says, where is the lamb? And Abram says, Hashem will choose for himself the land, my son. And then the verse repeated, Vayochu Shnehem Yachdav, and they went together, the two of them. And now we have at the end of the story, Avram returns alone. Where's Yitzchak? Picks up his lads, they get up, and they go to Beersheba, and the Torah uses that same phrase, Vayelchu Yachdav. It doesn't say Vayelchu Shnehem Yachdav, the two of them, meaning Avram and Yitzchak, but Vayelchu Yachdav. They went together, Avraham, and it seems like his two lads, because Yitzchak isn't mentioned in this verse, and they go to Beersheba, and Avraham dwells in Beersheba. End of our story. Very interesting end of this climatic story of the binding of Isaac, but it ends with Avram returning and then going to dwell in Beersheba. I will just quickly end with the last five verses. It says, it came to pass after these things, Avram was told that Milcah has had children, and it includes there in verse 23, Besuel, who's born at the end of verse 21, and then in 23, excuse me, at the end of verse 22, Besuel is born, and then in 23, he gives birth to Rebekah, and Rebekah, Rivka, of course, will become the wife of Yitzchak. And we noted that the story of Hagar ends with her taking a wife for Yishmael back from her birthplace of Mitzrayim, of Egypt, and the binding of Isaac is going to end also with the introduction of the birth of Rivka, and then the very next parasha begins with Avram sending off his slave Eliezer, his servant, to go find a wife for Yitzchak. So both stories of the child of Avram who's sent off and almost killed or dies and is saved by the angel of Hashem calling out to him some miraculous salvation, then both those stories end with the continuation of that child's progeny and the finding of a wife for both of those children, Hagar from her birthplace, Avraham from his birthplace. Interesting stuff, huh? Okay, all that we've done is the text. That's all that we've done. We've raised a lot of questions, and I think it's the story is fascinating. There are a lot of points that we need to do, so what we're going to do is we're going to do our regular pattern. We're going to go through Rashi and the Ramban and Rav Hirsch. And then we have a special treat. We're going to do Rabbi David Foreman's approach to this story, which I've already been introducing with bits and pieces along the way. So it's going to be less shocking to you because I've already started to bring it in, but it's a beautiful piece.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to torahmediaatlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.